tariffs have a huge impact on the supply of dollars outside the United States. But all of the debt still exists. All of the euro dollar debt, all the euro dollar credit, all the euro dollar invoicing still exists. And if all of a sudden the rest of the world doesn't get as much of the flow of dollars because now we've moved towards protectionist policies, we're not trading with the world as much, and when we do trade with the world, they're not getting as many dollars back because of the tariffs, this has huge implications, not only for the U.S. market, but it has huge implications for the rest of the world, and it has huge implications for the rest of the world's domestic markets.
First, you have to know, not fear, know that someday you're gonna die. It's only after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Milkshakes Markets Madness. My name is John Cutsmita. This is Brent Johnson. Every week we come to you to talk about the madness of the financial markets, a little bit of Brent's dollar milkshake theory, and whatever else comes to mind, and certainly whatever else has been going on in the world. Now, last week we recorded a pretty solid conversation. Unfortunately, circumstantially, it was published more or less than 24 hours after Trump was shot. So everyone's attention and focus was certainly on that. So if you haven't already, definitely go back and enjoy that conversation. I think we do cover some interesting topics. I think topics that everyone kind of likes to mull around, specifically Ponzi schemes and central banks, et cetera. Now, speaking of the event of last weekend, the Trump assassination attempt, Brent, for the Macro Alchemist, we put our minds and heads together and collaborated to very quickly put out a new think piece from the Macro Alchemist. If you haven't already, visit macroalchemist.com to go ahead and download that. But I want to start us off by talking about it a little bit because it is not political in nature at all. And what we're actually doing here is when you have an event like that, you also have this incredibly iconic photo opportunity that happened afterwards. Both sides are still deep, basically digging their heels. If you didn't like Trump before, it was all conspiracy. It was a setup. If you like Trump before, then, this is the deep state trying to take him out and you love him even more. I think people in the middle are now slowly kind of shifting that other direction. And that's really what we were talking about in this paper as we looked historically back at previous assassinations and assassination attempts. And we tried to give some emphasis or color on what were the then impacts in terms of policy, geopolitics, etc. Now, we're already starting to see some of this happen, not even a week afterwards. And I think what we want to start off by talking about here, and it's why we wrote the paper, is put your politics to aside. This is going to have this shooting last weekend is going to have a significant impact, especially if Trump gets elected. And it looks like things are definitely tipping in his favor. So you got to start thinking ahead. What does this mean for government, for business, for geopolitics? Already, Microsoft shut down their DEI department, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, saying it was no longer business critical. It's very much DEI is a big thing of the Democrat and left-leaning government initiatives. In addition, we just had this video come out yesterday, I believe it was. Bloomberg interviewed Mark Zuckerberg, and he basically gave an endorsement to Trump and said how the powerful of an image that was to see he get shot at and stand up and throw his fist at the air. So with all that being said, you're already starting to see kind of this sea change of events. So tell us a little bit about the paper we wrote. You are a big contributing factor to that. So share your thoughts on it.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those surreal things where we had already kind of started going down the path of looking at what happens when you have a dramatic change in political leadership. And it wasn't that we were focusing on assassinations. We were obviously looking at that, but a lot of it had to do with the fact that Biden was on shaky ground. Whether he would get elected or not was kind of a secondary thought. It was more like, who are the Democrats going to put up? That could have potential ramifications. And we had already been, talking about it, doing a little bit of research, but then this happened and we were like, well, we've pretty much got to drop everything else and just focus on this for the next 3 days. So, I think between Saturday night and Tuesday, all three of us, you know, just kind of cranked on this paper. And I think, I can't remember if we ended up putting it out on Wednesday or Thursday. But the interesting thing is by Wednesday or Thursday, or even before, while we were still writing, we were already starting to see some of the things that we had seen historically and that we were writing about historically play out in real time. So you already touched on a couple of them. But maybe I should take a step back first. And really what we wanted to do is we wanted to take a look at what happens when a president is either attacked or assassinated, or if there's a dramatic change in political leadership. And there, and again, we weren't really focused on what the policy changes will be and how that will affect, you know, the markets or different economies. You know, I think we may end up writing a follow-up piece to this one that delves into that in a little bit more detail. But right now, we were just trying to focus on, like, what are the big issues? What are the big themes that come out of an event like this? And what are the different areas you need to be looking at? And the first thing I'll say is anybody who thinks this isn't a huge deal is completely delusional. It is a huge deal. Even though it was an unsuccessful attempt on Trump, it still has all the same ramifications, or many of the same ramifications, of previous times where another attack on another president or a successful attack on a president. I think the most obvious parallel is Reagan, because, you know, the attempt on Reagan was unsuccessful. But the big themes that we realized when we looked at this, the big themes are you can either have a complete reversal of policy, which if, I think if Trump were to get into the White House, we would most likely be looking at a complete reversal of the last 4 years' policies. The other thing that we saw historically, where you have a continuation of policy, but with either much more force or much less force. You know, when we looked at JFK and Lyndon Johnson came in after JFK, what you saw was not only did he continue JFK's policies on civil rights, but he basically took a sledgehammer to it and just forced it through because he was just a much more hard-charging character than JFK was. Interestingly, you know, what we didn't talk about, John, with regard to Johnson was even though he very much stayed on the path of Kennedy when it came to civil rights, he kind of took the opposite path from a military and geopolitical perspective. You know, Kennedy was more of a dove, I guess you could say, when it came to the Vietnam War and military adventures around the world, whereas Johnson pretty much, you know, reversed that policy and gave full support to the Vietnam War and the fight against communism and however you want to define that era. So in that case, you had a little bit of a continuation and a reversal of policy. The other thing that we noticed was, regardless of whether it's a successful attempt or not, and it doesn't even have to be an assassination on a president. If it, you know, 9/11 is a very good example. You know, Pearl Harbor is obviously a very good example. Anytime it appears that the homeland is attacked in any way, or a representative of the homeland is attacked, you often see a resurgence of patriotism or love of country, or however you want to define that. And we've already seen that in a big way, you know, over the last week. Obviously, the people who supported Trump just came out full force and supported him even more. But, you know, for the last 7 years or 8 years, when he first started running the first time, Trump was often seen as a very unsympathetic character, and he was very polarizing. And, you know, for all of his presidency, and even since then, you know, week after week, month after month, all you hear is negative stories about Trump. The only week he got positive press during his whole presidency was when he fired rockets into Syria to take out an Iranian general. Other than that, you know, every time you read about him, he's Hitler. He's gonna be the downfall of democracy, and just, you know, just story after story about how he's the worst thing in the world. But when you have an attempt on his life that's unsuccessful, you automatically cast him as a sympathetic character. And politicians love the sympathy vote. People have, you know, politicians have many times used, you know, tragedies in their past or things that they've overcome in order to be positioned as a sympathetic character. you know, it was kind of hard to do that with Donald Trump. But now, not only does he have the populist vote, but he has a lot of sympathy, as the sympathetic angle as well. And that's obviously going to be played up. And to your point, the picture of him standing up after being shot at with his fist in the air, the blue sky in the background and the American flag weighing over his head. I mean, it's incredible. It just is. I mean, again, and even if you hate Trump, you have to admit that that is quite a photo. And no doubt the Democrats and the people who don't want him to be in power absolutely hate that photo, because it is a very iconic photo. And it 100 years from now, that will be a photo that is brought up and studied and looked at. And this will be an episode, you know, that is talked about forever. And that's the big thing that we learned from the paper, is that regardless of whether they are successful or not, events like this absolutely have an effect, a big effect on the future and the direction of America. And you often don't know what exact direction that will be or what impact that will be for sometimes 5, 10, 15, 25, 30 years. But by looking back at history, it's very clear that these events do affect politics. And so that's kind of where, you know, the other thing that we talked about in the paper was the role of the media. You know, not only does the media have to report on what happened, they are also a big part of crafting the narrative going forward, right? And so now, you know, the traditional media, with the exception of Fox, which is obviously very pro-Trump, and it's the most watched news organization in America, so it's hard to say that Trump doesn't have any support from the media, because he has a lot of it from Fox. But the other networks, I think it's pretty fair to say, are more left-leaning and, you know, have pilloried Trump for years. And so now they have to deal with the fact that he survived an assassination attempt. They can't be, it's very hard for them to be seen as totally partisan as they have been, because then they just look totally out to lunch, even more so than they did before. And then they have to be very careful of how they craft the narrative going forward. And the big thing to me is that when this has happened in the past, even just the last one with Reagan, there wasn't as much alternative media as there is now. You know, when Reagan was shot, there was largely, you know, a handful of different media sources, whether it was newspapers or TV programs or news organizations, that kind of reported what happened and gave updates. Now, you know, not only do you have all the traditional media organizations, but think about all the different podcasts, all the different YouTube channels, all the different self-published content now that, you know, the internet is around now. I mean, there's a fire hose of information now. And so it's harder for the traditional media to craft the narrative. And there's so much information, it's hard to kind of weed through and figure out what to keep and what not to keep, what's right and what's wrong. I mean, I've already, you know, I've seen at least 5 different animated recreations of the assassination attempt. I've seen 2 or 3 arguments or presentations on why the shooter was really on the water tower. I've seen an equal number debunking the water tower shooter and that there was a second shooter. But, you know, this is going to be like the JFK assassination. It's never going to be solved. Nobody's ever going to know exactly what happened. Nobody's ever going to believe the official story. or some people, that there are always going to be people who don't believe the official story. And so, and this is the thing so far, and I know I'm rambling on, but there's so many different things to think about here. So far, what you and I have discussed, John, is the internal American reaction to this. We haven't even talked about the geopolitical aspect yet, because the rest of the world has to deal with this as well. It's one thing if a president or a prime minister of a smaller country in some, you know, part of the world that doesn't get as much press coverage as the United States, if it happens. But it's another thing when the president of the United States or the former president of the United States, or even like the Speaker of the House, or, you know, when a major political figure in America, which is the global hegemon, has something like this happen, It has global ramifications because not only are the Democrats having to figure out how to deal with a now sympathetic Trump, the rest of the world is now having to figure out how do we prepare for another 4 years of Trump. You know, they kind of survived it last time. We're probably very happy when he wasn't elected again. We're probably somewhat concerned about him getting in again. But now they've probably gone from a little bit concerned to holy crap, now we have to prepare for it because the surge in his popularity is rising very quickly. And so you think about all the geopolitical ramifications this has. Think about all the economic ramifications this has. Think about the both internal and external things that have to be dealt with from a capital flow standpoint, from an economic standpoint, from a military standpoint. I mean, these are the big themes that we kind of discuss in the paper. So I really encourage everybody to read the paper because, again, we're not telling you what to think. We're not telling you this is going to happen. What we've done with this paper is I think we've identified the big themes that you need to be aware of, and then go do your own research on these different big themes because they are all going to come into play. I mean, this is a big deal. It just absolutely is.
Well, even with the way we usually conduct the conversations on this channel around finance, we try to stay in the middle. And if anything else, provide that grounded voice where we're shaking people out of their bias or their corner. So you can look at the knock-on effects as things are unfolding objectively. And whether you think gold is money and that's going to be the only thing you should invest in, or whether it's Bitcoin, you know, one of the things with the dollar milkshake theory, people constantly just seem to overlook is the fact that you do believe in gold, very, very much so. It's at the cornerstone of the entire idea, but you still just get thrown into this, you know, the dollar is the only thing that matters category. This is very much the same idea, right? We, you know, if you don't like Trump, you love Trump, it's not relevant to the information we're providing because, like you were saying, we kind of were starting this from a standpoint of where is the left headed as far as their candidate, because it was such a big question mark after the debate. And then the media put Biden into a number of interviews and scenarios to try to recover from that. And it was only getting worse. And when you look at the potential replacements, you think at least the first primary option is Kamala. And then you have to think about, what does she represent? Like, what is she bringing to the table? What are her policies potentially going to be? I think overall, it was just this black box. You know, she wasn't much better than Biden in front of the camera. They didn't really use or leverage her much over the last 4 years. And so when we look back at some of what went on, you know, during these or post these assassinations, Lincoln is a great example, because when Johnson took over, he completely flipped the script on civil rights. All the stuff that eventually, you know, became the South that we now know took an extra decade or two, if not more, because those policies that Lincoln was going to push forward, Johnson pulled back on. And so a lot of people in the South who had power, political influence, they got to, you know, stay in those roles. And so when we're looking at this, these are the kind of the knock-on effects you want to think about. And it also goes into play now with what who Trump has chosen as a vice president. I don't think, you know, the risk to Trump is de-escalated at all. I think it's just as likely that there's additional attempts here, especially if he is elected. So who's coming in afterwards? When you look at a Lincoln Johnson versus a Kennedy Johnson, you know, a J.D. Vance taking over for Trump, if something ever happened there, you want to start thinking about potentially where the U.S. is headed in these events. And right now, I think if nothing else happens to Trump, he's probably stepping into the White House, and you need to prepare for that, not only domestically, but geopolitically.
Well, and not only that, John, but I think people need to think about what does it mean, not just what does it mean for the next 4 years, because Trump will, if he gets in, he'll serve for another 4 years and then, you know, it'll be on to something else. But it, you know, it's setting up J.D. Vance to potentially be the successor, but it's also setting up the Trump children to be the successors. And I know that there's people out there saying, God, no, this can't be right. They're a bunch of nepo babies who've never done anything in their life, and they're not smart, and they're just as bad as his father. But again, put that, it doesn't matter. Put that aside, because if you think about it, you know, the Bush family dominated Republican politics for the better part of 20 or 30 years. The Clinton family and their kind of crew, so to speak, kind of dominated Democratic politics for 20 or 30 years. It's not out of the realm of possibility that the Trump family could dominate politics for the next 20 years. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be the case. I don't know what will happen, but you can't rule that out, especially if Trump gets in with a big victory in the way that after Reagan was shot. You know, Reagan was popular, but you got to remember, we were in a recession in his first term. And while he was kind of popular and people liked his policies from a geopolitical standpoint and from a global standpoint, his economic policies were not widely loved. We were in a recession. We had high interest rates. He raised interest rates, and then the dollar got strong, and it put downward pressure on U.S. manufacturing and the U.S. industries. And you know, the Reaganomics were not something that people just were clamoring for. But then when he got shot, and he handled it very well, and they showed pictures of him, you know, out of his hotel window. All of a sudden, he becomes this, you know, he was already charismatic because he was an actor, but now he becomes this charismatic, sympathetic figure. And he rode that sympathy to a huge victory in 84. And then it made him much easier to push through his following policies. Now, if Trump gets in on this wave of sympathy or wave of populism, wave of patriot, however you want to define that, and then he and Vance are able to push through a number of their policies as a result, then that kind of sets Vance up to be the next guy. And Vance would probably then in some form or another keep the Trump children or the Trump family or Jared Kushner, whoever it is, as part of his, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility to think this. So, and the fascinating thing for me to think about is how other countries plan for this, because not only was the world having to deal with kind of this deglobalization, you know, a fracturing of the one global community. You know, this all started before this whole thing with Trump. You know, you got to remember, for much of my life, maybe not the first 10 years, but really from the 80s, 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s, it was really a groundswell of globalism. We're moving towards one global marketplace. We're moving towards one global supply chain. You know, it's no longer that, you know, you buy a pair of shoes that were made, you know, within 100 miles of you. You know, the shoes were all made on the other side of the world. And it was this, it was, you know, when I think back about COVID, the most amazing, and the way they just shut the whole world down, it wasn't so much that the fascinating thing to me was not that they shut the world down, because you always kind of know that governments have this authoritarian streak in them and they can do something like that. What it really made me reflect on was that you could order something from your computer that was in China or was in, you know, Turkey or was in Brazil, and it could be on your doorstep 24 hours later. That's how efficient the global supply chain was. That's how efficient the one market was. Now, we no longer have that one world where everybody cooperates and everything's efficient and you order the part in China and it arrives at your doorstep the next day. That world is kind of gone. And so where we had the pendulum swinging towards, one world for 20 or 30, 40 years, now it's started to swing the other way. And now on top of that, even if Biden or a more traditional Republican was in the White House, that deglobalization, that move towards, you know, protectionism, that move towards two supply chains, that would still be a big deal. But forget about a Democratic candidate or forget about a traditional Republican candidate. Now you've got Trump, who really doesn't fit the mold of any of them, right? And it just exacerbates all of that. So my point with all this is that the rest of the world has to deal with this as well. It's not just the U.S. dealing with this. You know, Trump has said, I'm not only going to put on tariffs, I'm going to put on huge tariffs. You know, that has to have the rest of the world concerned. One of the things we didn't get, again, we didn't get into this into the paper, but we're going to have to talk about this at some point. Maybe we'll end up writing about it, is that, you know, part of my whole thesis is that the supply of dollars will not be enough to meet the demand of dollars. And as a result, we will get into the situation where the dollar will rise. Well, tariffs have a huge impact on the supply of dollars outside the United States, but all of the debt still exists. All of the euro dollar debt, all the euro dollar credit, all the euro dollar invoicing still exists. And if all of a sudden the rest of the world doesn't get as much of the flow of dollars, because now we've moved towards protectionist policies, we're not trading with the world as much, and when we do trade with the world, they're not getting as many dollars back because of the tariffs, this has huge implications, not only for the U.S. market, but it has huge implications for the rest of the world, and it has huge implications for the rest of the world's domestic markets. So, you know, and that's just one thing. That's just one thing. That's just the tariffs. We haven't even talked about the impact on the war in Ukraine. We haven't talked about the potential, you know, political and military conflicts surrounding Taiwan. But, you know, this is a whole new ballgame. And again, I think we did a good job of identifying the different areas that are going to be of concern and that need to be looked at. But my gosh, there are so many layers of the onion if you wanted to get down into the details of all these things. I mean, we could probably write 200 pages just on tariffs, right? You could probably write 200 pages on the military implications. You could probably write 200 pages on the impact to NATO. You could probably write 200 pages on the impact of not only the Republican Party, but the Democratic Party. So it's just, you know, I had said many times that I think we're in this Game of Thrones and on the world stage. And this is like, you know, a new guy walking into the battlefield that you weren't even sure was going to be there, but now he is, and he's a huge presence. And, you know, it just makes it all the more interesting.
No, I appreciate you, you know, diving into all of that. I think this particular topic and the way we approached it, it really embodies that term think piece, because it really, there's just so many tributaries and permutations that you can dive into. And it really is intended to make you think about it. And when you're talking about a wild card like Trump, there was, you know, I think since he stepped into office in 2016, things weren't really easy for him. And then ever since he left, whether you feel like he's deserved it or not is, again, not the point here, but he's had a lot of trouble between lawsuits and investigations. And a lot of that has been either kind of brushed to the side or handled and not really as impactful as I think his enemies would want it to be. But it's definitely kind of lit a fire under him. And now you have an assassination attempt. He's probably way more of a wild card than a lot of people have been thinking, because maybe at this point, you know, if you look at his first presidency, the idea of, you know, drain the swamp. I mean, a lot of these guys run on these cliches and narratives. You know, Obama was change and hope for 8 years and we got neither. You know, Trump never drained the swamp. Maybe at this point he's going in and he's finally been forced to become the thing that all of his followers believed he truly was, just because he's angry enough or just because he feels like now it's his destiny to do that. So some of the things that he might eventually decide to do could be very, very surprising and shocking. And he seems to have the right person in his corner to add to that volatility. Some of the things that J.D. Vance has said recently about not caring about what's going on in Ukraine. So I think there's a lot of knock-on effects here that people need to start diving into. You know, enjoy the think piece, go to Macro Alchemist and it's free to download. We want to get your feedback on it. Let us know if it's the right style and topic that you want to see us do more work on. Now, you talked about this multipolar world developing, and this is a term and a thing that people throw back at us quite frequently, not in a negative way, but just they present it as like, do you, you know, your dollar milkshake narrative and the U.S. hegemon, you know, coming under threat now because of all the factors post-COVID and just other things related to Ukraine war and the way that we weaponized the dollar over the last couple of years. So when you're looking at some of these things going on with Trump being made way more in tone right now, nationalistic than we've had the last 4 years, some of these changes that are suggesting a potential multipolar world, you did just reference that this makes tariffs, things like that, makes the dollar more scarce initially. Do you think this potentially shortens the lifeline of the hegemon, but in the short term, you still think it's you know, the same rules as usual?
Well, so in some ways, I think it makes the hegemon even stronger in the short term. Now, it may bring about the downfall of the hegemon sooner than it would be otherwise. And this is largely kind of what the whole milkshake theory says, is that, listen, global reserve currencies change, hegemons fall. That will happen to the United States as well. But it's not just going to be a slow descent, and the U.S. is not just going to willingly give it away. And now we have a guy who's potentially coming in. And listen, I would say this even if Trump wasn't coming in. Let's pretend Trump wasn't coming in. And listen, we don't know if he is yet or not, but let's pretend that he wasn't even on the stage. If U.S. hegemony was ever seriously threatened, I will go to the grave saying the U.S. would use every tool and every freaking weapon to maintain hegemony. Now, you might think that that's immoral and that that shouldn't happen, but that's irrelevant. they just won't give it away. The generals will use every bomb, every, you know, missile, every counterattack, every primary attack to maintain hegemony. They just won't give it away. And so if we're in this Game of Thrones where the U.S. is being challenged, and I would say that I would actually argue that we are still a very unipolar world. It's just that a lot of the other lower poles. So in other words, the U.S. is very much the hegemon, and there's, you know, a handful of people below the hegemon. Now, those entities below the hegemon, they are certainly rattling their sabers louder than they have, you know, in previous decades. And I think they are starting to want to get out from underneath the influence of the hegemon. But I still think we are largely the only superpower in the world. And someone like Trump coming in, I think, will use that to their advantage even more than a traditional president would use, because Trump really doesn't care what other people think. He's made that pretty clear, right? He will do what he thinks is right. And he has often said he likes the U.S. being the biggest, baddest guy, right? And I'll give you an example. I don't know if people heard this or not, but there was a senator, it was either a senator or a congressman, was telling a story about Trump maybe a month ago. And they said, the person was saying, this was my favorite story about Trump, and that before Trump left office, he was starting to negotiate with the Taliban about leaving Afghanistan. And so they were in a meeting with, you know, the head of the Taliban representatives. I don't know who they were. And, you know, Trump said something, listen, we would like to leave Afghanistan. And if you like that idea, then give me some time. And over the next, you know, I don't remember the exact details, over the next 3 to 6 months, we will exit Afghanistan. But if during that time you kill even one of my guys, I am going to kill you personally. And he took out a picture of the guy's house and showed it to him. And he says, I will kill you and I will kill your family. Now, Trump, this senator said that Trump said this. Now, whether Trump actually said it or not, I don't know, but I have a hard time believing the senator would just make that up out of the blue. Now, how many presidents do you know that would actually say that? Now, they might do it, but they probably wouldn't say it in a meeting, right? But that's kind of the president Trump likes to be, right? And Trump has said many times, you know, I like Putin. I can get along with him. You know, I certainly don't want to fight him, but if I have to fight him, I will. And he said the same thing about Xi. I like Xi. Xi's a really smart guy. He's done a great job for his country, but I'm not going to back down to him. And so, you know, it's the idea that Trump would like to see a diminished America on the global stage. I don't think that's the case. Now, he certainly wants to take care of the United States before he takes care of the rest of the world. And that will have ramifications for the rest of the world. But I don't think that elevates the rest of the world. In fact, I think it hurts the rest of the world very badly, which could then lead to military conflict because they won't want to be hurt that badly. And whenever a country gets in trouble, the first thing they do is they start blaming it on the evil foreigner, right? And so perhaps the U.S. becomes seen as even more evil foreigner because of our economic policies or because of whatever. And so then that, and listen, and with Trump, I don't think Trump will get us into a prolonged war, which could be really bad because it could be a very short, but a very, very devastating war, right? And because the other countries, you know, Russia's pretty much said, you know, this is a war of an existential war for us, right? And so, but they have to deal with a non-traditional president, right? Like part of the thing that makes Putin a little dangerous and makes Xi a little dangerous, makes Kim Jong-un a little dangerous, is you don't really, I mean, they're kind of crazy, right? You don't know what they're going to do. You can't plan for a crazy guy. Well, that's kind of Trump, and Trump kind of uses that to his advantage, right? He is happy to be the crazy guy, and he's happy to say, just try me, right? Just try me. And the thing is if traditionally, if a president bluffs, maybe people would call his bluff, but are you really going to call Trump's bluff? Like, really? I mean, maybe you will, but it's a risk, right? Because you just don't know what that guy will do. And so I think Trump will use that to his advantage. And so I think in many ways, it's going to be a much more chaotic world and a much more volatile world. And I think in a volatile world, even though the U.S. may fall on an absolute basis, I think they fall less than the rest of the world on a relative basis.
All right. Well, let's, in the last 10 minutes here, let's talk about, I think we did great coverage on all of that. Please check out the paper, macroalchemist.com. Now, we started off this chat by mentioning that there's already these knock-on effects that are happening. One of the ones now as we pivot into markets, and we'll try to keep this concise and then wrap up here shortly, is we saw the tech sector and the semiconductor sector get hit pretty hard because Trump has more or less said he doesn't see us supporting or going to the defense of Taiwan. He's certainly happy to sell defense to them to some extent, but that initial, all of these things just happened so quick, and you saw this pullback in the semiconductors. Please share your thoughts on that relationship, and then anything else you saw this week that was interesting in markets.
So this is going to be kind of a multi-pronged answer, and I'm going to reference back to our conversation last week. You know, one of the things that we've been pretty clear about, you know, over the last couple of years that we've been doing this is that ultimately the dollar milkshake theory says that U.S. equities are going to go a lot higher. And that's my view. I think U.S. equities are going to go a lot higher, but I'm not somebody who believes that markets go in a straight line. And, you know, I've said for a while now that I thought we needed to have a pullback in order to kind of take some of this froth out of the market because things had just gotten very extended. And last week you kind of made the point that, you know, we're not telling everybody to be short. And we're not saying that everybody should be preparing for a 1929 style crash. We're just saying to be careful. And I think I responded, and I don't remember exactly what I said, but I think I said, well, I'm probably net neutral to net short now because I had added some puts. And The reason I added puts is not because I have this great, you know, timing tool, but when I look at all of these different indicators that, I use, they were all starting to flash red, especially in the growth sectors and the tech sectors, right? And so that's where kind of I was focused on last week. But then at the beginning of this week, because remember, let me take a step back. Growth and momentum had been dramatically outperforming the rest of the market up until last week. And then last week, the Dow started to move and the Russell 2000 started to move higher. And so last week, where tech was very overbought on a number of different indicators, as overbought that I have ever seen them in 25 years of doing this. So I'm not trying to be dramatic, but a week ago, tech was as overbought as I have ever seen on all of my different indicators in 25 years. And then we got that same thing earlier this week on the Dow and the Russell. They both got so overbought. And so the reason that we had added protection to the downside a week ago is because, not because I was predicting a 1929 style crash, but just because all of my indicators were saying, this is the time to be careful, because markets don't go in a straight line, and everything had gotten to such a level that it just needed a break. And the thing is when you see the indicators get to those levels, you don't know what's going to be the trigger to then sell off. And you might not even need a trigger to sell off. That might just be a lack of a positive catalyst to send it higher. But a week ago, the semiconductor stocks were just completely overbought. I didn't know what would be the catalyst or if there would be a catalyst for them to pull back. But then to have Trump say, to have those things be so overbought, and then to have Trump say what he said, was kind of the perfect combination to lead to a sell-off, right? And so, that's a good example. When you get those readings that are that high, you don't know what it's going to be, but you kind of know something is going to happen that's going to make those come back. It just so happened this time that it had to be comments from Trump about, we're supposedly supposed to protect Taiwan, but Taiwan's making all this money and we're not making any money. Maybe they need to pay us to protect them, you know? And so since then, I think the NASDAQ had its worst week in 2 years, maybe 2 or 3 years. The Dow, I think, ended up being down like 1 or 2% for the week, but from the high down 2 to 3%. And I think even more so for tech. So, you know, we had a thing where markets got very stretched and now they've started to pull back. Now, whether we're going to have a bigger crash from here, I think we're going to see more downside. I've said for a while that I thought we would have some downside into August, and then we probably get some kind of a pop in the markets, because I think they will cut rates in September. But we saw similar price action in gold and silver. I think on Wednesday, gold made its all-time high, closed at its all-time high on Wednesday. Silver closed higher, but it wasn't as high as it was a month ago. But then come Thursday and Friday, they both sold off hard. I think silver was down 7% over the last 2 days, and I think gold was down 3% over the last 2 days. Now, here's the thing with both equities and precious metals. They both sold off so hard over a 2 or 3 day period. They're probably due for some kind of a little bounce, because markets don't just always go in a straight line. But my guess is if we get a little bit of a bounce Monday or Tuesday, then we'll probably roll over for another week into the Fed meeting. And so then maybe I would anticipate Powell speaking dovish, at the Fed meeting at the end of August, beginning of July. And we'll just have to wait and see how the markets treat those comments. But, you know, this is definitely a time period didn't even talk about the VIX, but for several times over the last month, we've talked about how, you know, markets are at their all-time high, VIX is at its all-time low. The best time to buy insurance is when you can, not when you have to. Well, the VIX went from, I think, 11 or 12 to 16 or 17 last week. And so my guess is that August is going to be fairly volatile. We're kind of in the latter, going to start getting into the latter part of the summer. Markets will be a little bit thin because people will be away on vacation. And, you know, we could get some fireworks in August.
Well, big theme for 2 years now that you had coined early on when we first started the show is violently sideways. For 2 years, at least in the momentum side, the equity markets, it's been a one-way direction. generally a pretty consistent climb up with very, very few pullbacks. On the opposite side of that, the bond market has been getting crushed for 2 years. All the things you just mentioned, you know, we're getting these up and downs in precious metals, up and downs in equities. You have these like rapid rebalancing. It felt like there was a bit of shift out of tech and those major caps into the Russell 2000 for a hot moment. Meanwhile, amidst all of that, we're finally seeing some resilience in the bond market. Usually when you have any kind of this like price action volatility in equities, bonds just couldn't find the footing. But despite a number of different things, whether it's, you know, a decent retail sales report or whatever it is, bonds have hung in there and have been doing pretty well, mainly because inflation is finally kind of making everybody content. Let's just leave it at that. We have this Friday, pretty much the main thing is an inflation report. PCE, personal consumption expenditures, comes out on Friday. That's the Fed's preferred metric for measuring inflation. I don't know, Brent, I feel like we would have been given some kind of nod from someone at the Fed, some kind of jawboning. I think, you know, the PCE is going to be in line with the PCI and the rest of it. So I kind of feel like there's not much of a surprise coming for us in the inflation sector, or the inflation report on Friday. So I have to see what the market does on its own up into that. I think we gave everyone a lot to think about here. We spent pretty much the entire conversation diving into the reasons for the think piece we wrote, which we called Turning Points, and some of the other knock-on effects we're already starting to see. We saw some of those start to play out in the equity markets, and I think we'll get a sense of what the market sentiment is starting off in what is somewhat another quiet week outside of PCE. So before we wrap up here, any last thoughts or anything else on your mind?
The only thing we didn't talk about, and I have to say this has my curiosity, is that not yet sure. Okay, so we saw a pullback in equities this week, and we saw a pullback in precious metals. I'm not sure that those pullbacks were related to liquidity issues. You know, they could be. It could just be that they were very oversold or overbought, and then Trump comments kind of led to them coming back. But the thing that I noticed was technology's had a tough week, but Bitcoin and cryptos had a pretty good week. And I've always said that, in my opinion, Bitcoin is just a pure play on global liquidity, maybe the best pure play on global liquidity. So I'm going to be watching crypto to see what it does, Bitcoin and, you know, Ethereum and some of the other, the digital assets, to see what they do over the next couple of weeks, to see if they trade more in line with the NASDAQ and the Mag 7, or if last week's divergence was something that has legs. So I think that is something to at least keep your eye on.
Well, to wrap up here, it reinforces everything we've been talking about. Trump makes a negative comment about Taiwan, semiconductors get smacked. Trump makes a comment positive about crypto and Bitcoin. Yep. Bitcoin has a bit of a bump in it. So it's already, you know, proof in the pudding of what we've been writing about. This is, you know, the very quick knock-on effects of like, whoa, it looks like Trump is going to, you know, have somewhat of a strong lead going into November. What does this mean? Where is he positive? Where is he negative? So I think that's a good place for us to end it. If you haven't already, please visit macroalchemist.com. Check out that report. Let us know what you think. You can follow Brent on Twitter using the handle SantiagoAUFund. You can find me there using the handle John Katsmita. And this show is on Twitter and at YouTube with the handle MilkshakesPod. Visit us on the YouTube channel to check out our Start Here playlist. So if you're unfamiliar or new to the dollar milkshake theory, we have a few videos there that are worth watching. Otherwise, everybody, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next weekend. It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.